Okay, so Burgers equation is a one-dimensional is the equation for the one-dimensional velocity field that depends on x and t. Both coordinates are one-dimensional. I will write the equation. So this equation is supplemented by the external force, which pumps energy into the system. Then energy is transferred over scales and dissipates due to viscosity. Dissipates on very small scales. About the external force, we assume that it has Gaussian statistics, and we specify its second-order moments. Actually, I will tell a little bit, yeah. I will tell what boundary conditions we use. So this force is Gaussian. We specify second-order correlator, cap of x minus x prime, y tensime. Also, we assume that this kappa function is a function of y. Is concentrated on some scale L, and that we have, say, boundary conditions on the scale which is much larger than this L. So we have some very large scale on which we put boundary conditions, for example, periodic boundary conditions, as it is done in numerical simulations. So in this setting, the steady state for velocities and for velocity differences exist, so we don't have to worry about it. So the question we ask is the following. Fix two points on a line, x1 and x2.
Are you sure that it will be I agree with you, but can I just tell that it's very difficult, and nobody did it, that was the claim, to prove that there is a steady state as long as you have velocity, as long as you have force in the statistics, which is kind of homogeneous in space.
They did prove that if we have periodic boundary conditions on some fixed scale, there is a steady state for velocity and for velocity difference.
Yeah.
So I'm not talking about infinite line.
Yeah. But now
when shocks can come from infinity.
Period,
yes, but
when
fixed.
That's absolutely clear that when the period is fine, then you do have
right.
Now, when you turn the period into infinity, whether the steady state exists or time,
actually, I don't do that. I don't put my period to infinity. It's large by fixed.
For finite period, can I prove at the beginning of 90s that you do have a steady state? Actually,
you can say that
periodic in time and random in space.
Okay. Yes. So my system has a finite size, but I will be talking about velocity differences. So even if steady state for velocities does not exist, it can exist for velocity differences. So the setting is if steady state exists, what will be the distribution for this velocity difference? So we fix two points on a line x1 and x2, and suppose that at some moment we have u x1 t, u x2 t. So we fix two points and consider velocities at the same time. And we will ask what will be the probability to find some given velocity difference, which depends some given velocity difference, which is equal u 2 minus u 1. That's the question. So we can answer qualitatively to this question from a very simple consideration. As we know, Burgers velocity field tends to create shocks from some initial smooth velocity field. So if I consider smooth velocity field in the course of time, it will create a shock. From this, we see that negative gradients try to be more negative, and positive gradients actually decrease with time. So the probability of having large positive gradient or large positive velocity difference will be much smaller than the probability of having large negative velocity difference. In fact, I will show that it will decay hyper exponentially fast here, and it will decay as a power for negative velocity differences. This power decay is actually an important feature because it is responsible for the phenomenon of intermittency. Because if we try to calculate averages of this kind, we will see that the integral will diverge starting with some n. So in this integral will be starting from with some n, it will be contributed not by the central part of the PDF, but its tails, it's very very large negative tail, or in other words, it will be contributed by shocks. So we will be interested in this central part of the PDF, which is universal. In other words, we will be interested in the inertial interval of our turbulence. When we will be interested in the scales, which are much smaller than pumping scale and much larger than the dissipative scale. So we will not be interested by contributions of large negative structure shocks. So, if you're asking what happens with the structure of shocks, so structure shocks will be different. We will have shocks like that, with some endpoints, and this picture is not stationary. These endpoints move in different directions. These are shocks in two dimensions. These are discontinuities in velocity field. These are discontinuities in velocity field. So we have two-dimensional velocity field. These are discontinuities. Yes. 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 But we have to specify what particular what particular directions of velocity field. Yeah, so this is the definition of structure function, and we believe that for very small y's, the structure function behaves like power of y. And this power will change with n. This is precisely the phenomenon of intermittency. So scaling can change with n. Okay, so to be more precise, let's introduce the following generating function for these velocity differences. So we'll define this function as follows: E mu U minus U1. So, and this is nothing but Fourier transform of the velocity difference PDF. It can be shown that that this function satisfies. So let's first drop the viscosity. So it can be shown that this function satisfies the closed partial differential equation in this case. So we can close this advective term, this nonlinear term, exactly in this approach. So the equation will be the following: z dot plus so here I drop the viscous term. So if we try to find the steady state of this equation, we will immediately see that a steady state does not exist. And this happens because we drop the viscous term. So we can, if we're interested in y, which is much smaller than l, we can expand this function as y squared over with some coefficient, which doesn't matter. So, and we can look for the solution in the scaling form. Actually, this was done by Polyakov in 95. In the scaling form. So no viscosity here. Yeah. Okay, so now we can write an ordinary differential equation for function z, and then recalling that z is nothing but Fourier transform of the probability density function, we can do this Fourier transform and write equation for the function p of delta u y, which in a scaling form looks like over y. So the equation for this function w is the following. So, yeah, I have this scaling ansatz for function phi. Then I took Fourier transform to this function, so it also has scaling form, and get this equation. So this term corresponds to the external forcing. These two terms are nonlinear terms.
Time
is the same. This is steady state.
But you just say that you don't have a stationary solution for it.
Okay. I can say that assume. First, I'm doing some manipulations for this equation. Then I can ask, let's try to find a stationary solution to this equation. There is no stationary solution to this equation. Actually, one can see that situation even worse. This equation does not preserve the PDF. And it happens because when we threw away the shocks, we have only positive velocity difference, and we don't have negative ones. But the total balance, for example, delta u should be equal to zero on the average, right? Because of translational variance.
Why don't you have
negative? Because I just threw away the viscosity.
You don't have some negative.
Very large negative, which I see. So, this equation doesn't have steady state, and the reason is because we dropped. It generates infinitely large negative gradients. It just if we consider like analogy with Langevin equation, we have particles that go to infinity. Particles in space delta u that go to minus infinity. And therefore, there is no steady state. There is no balance with this particles that go to. Yes. Just even forever in this space, but it happens very, very fast with time. So, what was proposed by Polyakov is to introduce the operator product expansion. So he said that the term we cannot close here is a term of the following kind: nu u double prime x e lambda u x. So we cannot express this term as any derivative of the exponent. It's derivative with respect to x. Okay, if I don't have t, with respect to x. So we can close this term. So he said that if we substitute this fluctuating product of these two fluctuating fields into any averaged expression, so I can multiply with some other operators and average, so the results will be exactly the same when nu goes to zero, as if we substitute some other finite operator, which is nothing but operator product expansion of this term. So in other words, these two operators, when we try first to split points x1 and x2, and then fuse two points together, will be singular. So if we have two different points, everything is perfect. We can set nu to zero, and nothing, as there will be no singularity. Now, let's first set nu to zero, and then try to fuse these two points together. We will have a singularity. This product will be singular. So now, this tells us that, but on the other hand, we know that product nu with this expression is finite, because this viscosity provides finite effect to our statistics. No, it doesn't depend. No. This is the idea of the operator product expansion. So that's why this singularity, which appears here, should be cancelled exactly by this nu. So nu regularizes our theory on small scales. We have some singularity here, which should be cancelled exactly by this nu. And he suggests the following expression. I will write and then explain why it is so. A then du x plus, I will write it in this form, b minus 1 divided by lambda u prime e plus lambda. So both of these operators are finite because this operator is finite by our initial assumption. This operator is finite because it's nothing but derivative with respect to x of some finite function, so it's finite too.
What is lambda?
Lambda is this lambda. In this lambda. Because right now I'm not talking about difference, I'm talking just about some general case. Yeah, it was mu in front of difference. So
okay.
Then just some change, but yeah, and so why we have this equation? Why we should necessarily have this exponent with the same lambda? Because if we take product with some other lambdas, and set this large, and consider that this scale L is very large, we should have a Galilean invariance in our expression. That means that when we shift all u's with some constant, the average should not change. We can shift all u's with some constant. Right? So whatever, and this expression is Galilean invariant. So after fusing two points, we still have to have the Galilean invariant expression. So we will definitely have to have this exponent here, because if we start to shift all u's, this expression is proportional to delta of sum of all lambdas. So the same lambda should be here. The same lambda. We assume that L is much, much larger than all differences of these points. So these portions are pretty close to each other. Yeah. So our x is somewhere here. Okay, and it's a force loss correlation function. So and we also have this form. So this scaling with lambda, simply because we want to have scaling invariance in our problem, and this scaling is dictated by the scaling of this nonlinear term and scaling of the force. So if we assume that everything can be expanded in exponents and exponents possibly multiplied by u prime, this is the only possible form. Yeah. Some derivative with respect to what?
X?
Yeah.
I understood you that what your answer is that you write is u double prime d something.
Yes.
As some sensible expression.
Yes, some finite expression.
You want to make it into something which is more regular.
So by you suggest that I take some derivative with respect to x of this term. Yeah, but this is kind of minimal model, because if we add some extra derivative, we will add some higher derivatives in this equation. We will get we don't want derivatives higher than we already have in our equation.
I think that the crucial part of the whole thing that maybe you can explain it a little differently. Maybe you could answer Bruno's question in a little more detail. Why a second order density is not made to copy it? Maybe Lisa, you could tell us what is the
question. It might come true, but what are our feelings?
That's
what you expect from dreams, it's beautiful. This is the one. I'm not kidding. I'm telling you exactly the way how for the book. And this is the most beautiful dream about the situation.
I would like to know a little bit as to why you dreamed up the way you
want to dream, huh?
Look,
you it's a view and view to prime. Yeah. You want to correlate it with some dual and some, and you know that there is something finite, but you don't know if what is finite here could be in a finite form explained by you itself. It might not be true, it might be true. This is the whole idea that you can get rid of this kind of theory. Because exactly this, let's say, instead of exponent of lambda, you take just u. So you have nu u to prime u. It is your dissipation. It is nu u prime square. It is your energy dissipation. You know that it is fine. Okay? And it is just a constant. When you average it, it is a constant. Now you want to generalize. And to generalize it, you want to get rid of the second derivative. You want to express everything in terms of lower derivative. Then you can close the system. And this is a way of... I don't know of any argument why it should be so, but I know why he wants to be so. Yeah. That's why I call it a dream. You want? And this is exactly what Bruno asked. Why there is no second derivative?
But if you want to ask them, you try to put back in and see what it gets you.
Yeah, right, right. Right, yes. Yes, let's see. We'll see how it works.
It is an infinite statistical chain.
Right.
There is no way to check it in any finite form, that particular equation in check. In principle, there are infinite number of checks that you have to substitute to, or to compare with this.
So here we have
a
question. Maybe there's a formal answer to this, I don't know. You can tell me. Simply, you can write it in a
series. Right, yes. Yes.
Is a very precise statement.
Yes.
So does this correspond to anything else?
No. So far, this field theory is not local because we have a force-force correlation not at one point. And so far, nobody was able to derive it exactly.
I mean, we've raised my question, right?
Yeah.
So suppose that you take this undot or the dissipated sun.
Yes.
Then presumably there is a way of taking that and going back to writing down what was the verbal equation to begin with.
So in other words, having this Fokker-Planck equation can vary the Langevin equation, which generates this Fokker-Planck equation, right? I will tell about it later.
Okay.
I'm going to show how it works later and why we have this term, why we have that term.
So,
I will show
you. Can go into detail, but the idea is that if you take this and you go back,
yes,
and you get something that looks like the Burdick equation, that's the nonlinearity of the Burdick equation, but the dissipated term will be different.
Yes. Okay. It will have some... Actually, it's impossible to write only using this equation. We also have write the equation for the density, for the if we have Lagrangian formalism, dx a t over dA, where a is initial point. And then this... One can add some terms to those two equations in Lagrangian picture in such a way that they will generate precisely this PDF, this Fokker-Planck equation. I want to show how it works, and later I will try to explain why, maybe. So, yeah, first of all, one should check that this assumption is self-consistent with the infinite chain of equation, and it was done by Polyakov. He checked that it's indeed consistent. So this conjecture is self-consistent. Conjecture about the greater product expansion, about the scaling covariance will also turn to be self-consistent, as we will see in comparison with numerical simulations. So if you sum two points and get new operator, so you can have like this average with split points and inserted into your chain of equation. And then you have to check that you can first fuse points and then substitute them in the chain of equation. And it will not contradict to anything.
And so you
No, it's not right. He considers the product like any number of n, mu xn. And he says that there is no contradictions. So one can write using this assumption the closed equation for this correlation function. Yeah. And there is no contradiction if we try to find these points in this integration function. So n point Hamiltonian will go to n minus 1 point Hamiltonian, and okay. It was done like that, yeah, sure. So now let's see what equation we will have here. So we will have the following equation: w dot plus, there is no dot because I'm interested in the steady state, plus z prime plus 2d plus 1z equals to minus w. Now this is the Schrödinger equation. And we will see it immediately if we write w as a new psi function minus z cubed divided by 6. And for this psi function, we will have the following equation. So we have some potential which depends on B, and A is the ground, is the energy in this potential. Now we should look for... Steady state. We'll check it. So now we'll see that we have to look for the ground state of this Schrödinger equation, because our PDF should be finite, positive, and normalizable function. This is the only function which satisfies to this condition is the ground state of this equation. So for any given B, we have to try to find such A as an energy of this ground state. And this is going to be the solution. And it turns out to be that this potential behaves in such a way that almost for any B greater than 1/2, we can have some energy of the ground state A of B. But B cannot be arbitrary. So this there is some constraint on this A and B. It comes from the condition of positivity of dissipation. Indeed, if you consider this product, nu lambda u double prime e lambda u multiplied with something, inserted into some average, which depends on other points. And then we see that we can integrate it by parts, this term. So we can write it as d over dx, nu lambda u prime e lambda u, and then differentiate this exponent minus nu lambda square u prime square lambda u multiplied with something. And this term should go to zero when nu goes to zero, because this is a finite expression. So there is no this term, this zero, and this term is always non-positive. So there is some constraint on this a and b, and this constraint in terms of a and b will look like b should be greater or equal than 3/4 and less or equal 1, and a here a is 0, and here a is minus 0.45, and here a is somewhere in between. So there is whole range for this equation which is consistent with our initial equation. So It turns out that the limiting, that the case when b equals to 1 and a equals to 0.45 almost precisely coincides with numerical simulation. So now I will show the comparison.
B equals to 1, that means that nothing disappears.
Yes, that only this term is relevant. So originally Polyakov thought that this limit works when a equals to 0 but b equals to 3/4. So we can tell only looking at numerical simulations, because there is no other way from this theory to choose one particular member of this family.
In principle, sir, there is no way to tell. Only is there some kind of another so consistently check or something with this figure?
There is some argument which was told by Thomas Witten in Chicago. So he said, let's consider these dissipative terms. And now let's put our solution into the dissipative terms. and see which tail, right or left, gives contribution to the dissipation. And we immediately see that contribution to the dissipation will come only from the left tail, only when B equals to 1. If B is not equal to 1, the contribution to the dissipation will come also from the right tail. Yeah, so maybe... No, actually, no. In this approach, the only thing that recalls about that remembers about the dissipation is only this condition of positivity. Actually, if we can consider some other dissipative operators, for example, fourth derivative, sixth derivative, and so on, and this theory says that like nothing prevents. If we have different dissipative operators, we can have different coefficient of expansion into this operator. So possibly different dissipative term can lead to different members from the family, but it's still conjecture. So this is the comparison of the central part of the PDF. So I will tell you what it means here. So xi here is delta u divided by y. This numerical simulations is a solid line. What? It's a PDF. So direct numerical simulations is a solid line, and the theoretical prediction is this dashed line, is heavy dashed line. So line which is here is a PDF without if we just throw this dissipative term. So there is no positive solution. So we see that PDF is. There is. There is no positive. Yeah. So, and now I will show you comparison of the. Yeah. Of delta u divided by y. Of delta u divided by y. So, xi is delta u divided by y. Normalized to some mean value. So. Yes. So the left tail of the PDF. Here dashed lines are results for different Reynolds numbers. So the highest Reynolds number is here, solid line. So they have tail. They see that the tail just very close to -3, and this is exactly what is predicted by the theory.
So this.
Yeah.
What is this?
But numerics still exist.
Yeah.
So what is the -1 denominator?
So -1 is the contribution of the shock. So this shoulder of the shock, it's actually irregular structure. So we can just read off. So the probability of having shock larger than some of having a gradient larger than some given gradient, if this gradient lies inside the shock, can be easily calculated. It gives -1. So this is a comparison, and actually...
So you can't fit -3 after something like that.
From here, it seems to be... So he says that it's kind of... It can be a little bit larger, like 3.2, or a little bit smaller, like 2.9 from this picture, but not 3.5 from this picture. But I will show that actually we don't have large enough inertial interval here, only like one and a half decades here. We definitely will not large, and I will explain why. So
is that the biggest simulation done?
Yeah, the biggest.
Doesn't the PDF depend on the distance? Are you equal to 1?
On the distance of y? It's normalized. Delta x1 minus x2 is y. It's fixed. And so everything depends only on this scaling combination.
Okay, so that's different from, you know, so,
yeah.
I mean, not everything. I mean, it's not that the whole theory is so similar.
So. So right now I will try to construct the whole PDF. So PDF looks like that. We have right tail, which is e to minus delta u cube divided by 3. Left tail, which goes like delta u cube, and this cube is nothing but 2b plus 1, and b is equal to 1, so it's cube. Here we have nu divided by delta u, so this is dissipative contribution. And we have some exponential decay here, which comes from very central part of the shock. So if we look at what is no, I will tell. Yeah, now I will have this PDF and I will have like 15 minutes. I will try to. So this crossover point is precisely when this asymptotic match this one, and one can show that it's 1 over square root of nu or square 1 over square root of Reynolds number.
Is there any derivation of this other part nu over
delta u? It's a Hamiltonian
argument, or
this part, yeah. Very rigorous derivation, sure.
Huh?
Yeah, it has very rigorous derivation. No, it was wrong by correction, but it's actually very simple. I can show it like a few lines. But maybe after.
Paper fragment of 98.
Ah, in this. Yeah. I don't want to talk about this tail because I'm interested only in the inertial interval. But it's also a question. So when it's very large Reynolds number, to get very large inertial interval, and so far we can get Reynolds number only about. Of Reynolds number, right? So, and right now we have simulations available for Reynolds numbers out of 18,000. So, and if we take square root, it's not a large number. So, we really have to have square root of Reynolds number to be very large. That's the problem. And even if we assume for a moment that this decay is faster, then we have to have even larger Reynolds number to have reliable numerical simulations, because this point moves. So now, how to explain this tail minus delta u cube? First of all, it follows immediately from balancing of these two terms. So one can just analytically derive it from here. Secondly, and could be obtained. I know like three ways of deriving this tail. Secondly, why could one could obtain it from instanton consideration by Gurari and McDowell? So it's also very simple because events that contribute to this tail are very rare, and therefore they can be considered by instanton consideration. And the most simple way is just consider Lagrangian particles, because right tail is contributed is not sensitive to the dissipation, and if we drop the dissipation, we have just a Lagrangian particle moving in the just driven by force. Right, so we have an x is the integral of the Brownian motion. So and we have to find the probability that we will have delta x separation of particles of the order of 1, because the force acts on the order of 1, and have gradient of xi. So the time of the separation should be delta x divided by delta u is 1 over xi. This is the time of the separation. But we know that probability distribution for the integral of Brownian motion, x, is proportional to minus x squared to time cube, right? And x of the order of 1, so we see that this is proportional to minus xi cube. So this is just Handwaven derivation, but it's actually it's rigorous derivation. One can do it rigorously. Brownian motion is the velocity x dot. So x is the integral of Brownian motion. Yeah, just considering this. So now the structure function. So structure function looks like that. Beta n is equal to 1 for n less than 1, and equal to n for n less than 1, n equals to 1 for n greater or equal to 1. And this is easy because for n less than 1, contribution comes from the central part. For n equals to 1, contribution starts to come from the shocks. This structure function is proportional to probability of finding a shock on the distance y. And this probability is just proportional to y, to the interval. Okay, now I have 15 minutes. I can tell about multidimensional Burgers, so I can tell about comparison with shock structures in one dimension. Like. Okay. Okay. Yes. Sure. So if we leave only this term, the equation can be done in the following way. Consider Lagrangian picture, x, which depends on some initial position and time. So In Lagrangian, introduce xi, which is equal to u prime, and xi satisfies to the following equation without viscosity. F prime, right? Just gradient, just depends. It's Lagrangian picture. Now let's supplement this equation by the equation for the density, also in the Lagrangian picture. And so if we put instead of zero here a rho, this Langevin equation immediately will generate this equation for the PDF. So what is the sense of this A anomaly? A anomaly is nothing but average of the velocity gradient calculated over the central part. Actually, it's
positive.
Yeah. Actually, it's positive because then density increases on shock. So it's no. So xi, just real u prime is xi plus u prime calculated on shocks. Right. So if this is positive, this is negative.
About this
term.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I put it. Dot plus, put this result here, plus on shocks, root to zero. This is positive. Yeah, but so this is zero, average of this is zero. So this is positive, this is negative. So density accumulates on shocks. This density grows when you go closer to shock. It is the same. It should be negative. Right. Okay. This is negative. Positive, right.
You want minus 840
possibly? Yes.
So density goes up.
It means that it's the generation of particle, and not absorption, what I mean.
So it's generation of particle?
Yeah, not absorption.
Why would you want to generate particles?
To simulate stuff.
But you don't want to generate stuff. It's already there. You want to simulate the dissipation, that it's stuck.
No, he doesn't have the dissipation quite. When you throw shocks away, you lose probability in the same as real probability distribution. Do you want now to put something into this picture which mimics shock? In a sense, there are something which generate, which accumulate particles. You add this, you have to add particles to your picture, and that's what you're doing here.
Take our situation, that's what we're going to do something on the run. You do get such a stuff, you develop similarities. So the first hour that you get is to take out the situation. So you can put it on the equation that develops stuff.
Yeah.
So what you need is not something that uses stuff, but what you need is something that smooths stuff.
No, you don't need it. You want to forget about whatsoever, but you want to keep your probability. And your probability is basically the number of particles in your system. So what is absorbers of particles? You have to replenish.
Okay. Okay. So now there is some question with all this picture. So let's consider very high negative velocity gradients. This very high negative velocity gradients. Yeah, but they didn't have quite a type force since they had a decay in the
Burgers
turbulence.
For decaying, it's no doubt.
Yeah. So, and I will show why. Suppose that we don't have external force at all. So, large negative gradient appears only in pre-shock events, when we are about to create the shock. Only in pre-shock events. But when we have a pre-shock, it's actually, everything is very universal there, because we have a cubic parabola here. U is proportional to x to 1 to power 1/3. So what is the region in this space where we have gradients larger than some given gradient? But it's very easy to estimate x to minus 2/3 is of the order of xi, right? So x of the order of xi, 3/2. Right. Now, what's the velocity of motion of this point? Because this point moves to the shock. This point moves to the shock. So the velocity is this. Velocity is minus. Small, yeah. So now let's put it here, and you will see that it's xi to minus what? Minus 1.
You want to
say
time?
Yeah,
time. It is just 1/1
time. Right. Because this distance is this, and velocity is this. So the time when this point will reach the shock, because shock is created here, is 1/xi. So now if we consider picture in x, actually this was done by Sinai and collaborators a couple of years ago. If you consider a picture where shock is created, shock created at some point and then propagates along this space-time line. And this pre-shock event, so points where shock, where velocity gradient is larger than some given velocity gradient, is some region here. So the probability to have shock larger than this given number is just area of this region. And this area is 1/xi multiplied by 1/xi 3/2. Its area is 1/xi 5/2. this is the probability of having shock greater than xi. Right? So the probability density is 1 divided by xi to the power 7/2. It's smaller than this probability, and it completely contradicts to this theory because the theory prohibits anything. So 3/2, we should have said 3/2 is b greater than 1, but b cannot be greater than this, greater than 1. It will contradict the theory. So there is no rigorous explanation why this happens. But very physical explanation is that when we consider some particular structure, we completely throw away all collective effects. We throw away shock interactions. We throw away, say, creation of shocks of shock when we have some shock on its shoulder, something like that. So the possible explanation of this discrepancy, if you do, because nothing in this statistical analysis contradicts to this interval. The only contradiction is this is consideration of some particular structure. But we believe that it's incorrect to consider some particular structure. You have to consider all the collective effects to get the benefit. Yeah, but when we consider decaying turbulence, we consider just creation, just number of shocks will be just given from the beginning. You will know, I mean, how many... You start from a smooth...
You can have shocks on shoulders of other shocks too, I mean, that's not prohibited. The only difference...
You don't have external force that creates shock all the time.
Yeah. Now, the only difference is that you do have force. And in the decaying case, I believe you agree that the decaying case has 7/2. Now, what is the difference in your case? That after shock started to create, your force continues to act. That's
yes.
The only difference in the
case. Right.
And now you're saying, here I'm still very much surprised, that this force, which is life scale, and my shock, which already has some kind of small scale
right.
created, that somehow it's very important that this force continues to act in this
right.
shock. It completely changes the statistics.
Right.
Of large negative velocity, I learned something about hydrodynamic turbulence from this statement you're making, that the force in your major hydrodynamic system.
I'm asking a question, I'm not making a statement. I still find it hard to believe.
But the difference is due to force, that's what you eventually say.
If this is correct, then the difference is due to force, and it's very difficult to believe, because we are talking about very small scale, and force is large scale, and somehow this is the only difference.
And of course, like with all this, a question that the operator brought up in time is that that program.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I recall from the paper that last thing you gave me by Jacobson, I.O., that the forces change the whole.
Yeah, but that's all power law forces.
That's different. See,
Yeah, but actually, if we for a moment admit that there can be this change in the velocity probability, then we immediately don't have any universality in the picture. Because there can be no scaling, because everything will depend not only on the second coefficient here, but also on the higher coefficient. Because this cubic parabola is very sensitive to this high coefficient. And this, the whole PDF will be not universal. There is no point to talk about universality in this picture. So take this PDF. Leave the second coefficient the same. Change the fourth coefficient. PDF will change. Just
you said if my answer is not minus 3,
right?
I mean that everything is possible.
Right. If we assume that this tail is contributed by this pre-shock events, which are non-universal, because this cubic parabola is not is. Yeah, I'll explain. So here we expand this force created only up to second term, only to kappa 2 y squared, right? So in our force, in some sense, higher coefficients of expansion are not important. They don't enter this equation at all. So if you consider right, but all the coefficients like if you change kappa 4 with respect to kappa 2,
yeah,
this shape of this PDF will change. No, the shape will change. Say point. Say if we have, I mean, the shape of this PDF will change.
Consider what we call blue turbulence, okay? Which means that somebody visits tourists once a day and, you know, and flush it. And then you average over 1 week. I mean, it's still turbulence. Now, consider the same situation here. You have your portrait,
mm-hmm,
which acts for a short time, produces some initial very smooth large scale distribution,
right.
Then you switch it off, then you have exactly decaying phase.
Right.
And it creates, and then you average your probability up in many such events. You have exactly 7 over 2.
Yeah, 7 over 2 does not depend. I agree with that.
So what
the Paul, I'm talking about the whole shape of the PDF.
Oh, yeah.
The whole shape of the PDF.
The top, how it matches the top and the lower.
Yes.
Unity, of course, it depends, but nobody cares. Of course, it might be non-universal. Who cares? It is, well, it's,
okay.
We're talking now, because the Paul law is very important. It's something which is somehow closely related to that.
No, I'm just. I'm just saying that just there is no scaling convergence, because if you have y square here plus kappa 4 y force,
yeah,
this equation is not scaling invariant anymore.
So
there is like the whole point of this consideration is existence of scaling convergence.
Isn't it supposed to be a rule the dark with -3?
Is
what you are now talking about? What
no,
the
I'm not.
Is the argument in favor of -3 or what?
No, argument of if we assume this picture, so higher order coefficients of expansion are definitely important in creation of this shock. Higher order coefficient, this kappa of the correlator of the force, are definitely important. Because
so if you take into account higher order terms, then of course you can restrict somehow your initial interval.
So what? I mean, come on, there is an interval tail, another tail, which of course has a universal form, but the coefficient dimensionless depends on this form kappa of y. You take Lorentzian, it will be one coefficient, you take Gaussian, it will be another coefficient. So what? Who cares? I mean, all functional dependence are the same. Some numbers, of course, depending on the form of
Richard, you can fight the numbers.
Yeah, we can.
The I have a trivial question. If you put f equal to 0 and go through the upper product function,
F equal. No, it works only for the steady state, because as I told, this equation is this equation does not conserve the probability.
So in fact, it's
actually
the
this time. I can't say anything about the time evolution of the PDF. So this is valid only in the steady state.
One of them is
cool. No, I wanted to know.
One of them is
cool.
Okay. Thank you.